Welcome into another edition of Football 52, episode number 19. And Coach, as always, we do this with UNC head football coach Ed Lamb. It is June 12th. We're moving right along, man. It's flying by, doesn't it? It feels like it's kind of flying by these last couple of weeks.
It sure does.
Coach, yeah, grab
thanks. Yeah. I was talking about 3 feet away from the microphone. So,
hey, it happens sometimes.
Yeah, you said episode 19?
Yeah, episode number 19.
And I guess I haven't habituated to speaking into the mic.
I think by episode 20, going to have this down. It's going to be easy breezy for the rest of the way.
No doubt about it. I feel better every time, but that was a little setback right there.
So what's been going on the last couple of weeks?
Oh, man. Well, I mentioned it last time we talked, but high school camp season.
Sure.
Which is, we've got a few different types of camps. We've got a youth camp, which we need to do a better job of marketing and get some local youth out. And so we actually didn't have enough youth sign up for that.
Really?
We probably didn't find the right times. We were looking at the way Coach Smiley does his basketball camps, and it's a little bit more of a kind of an activity camp, you know, where I think parents are like, hey, go get busy. And obviously there's a lot of good instruction and stuff like that. I don't want to speak for basketball, but that's kind of what we see from the outside. And we were thinking it would be more like what we do with our high school camps, which is kind of an all day thing. And then ended up settling on a plan that didn't quite get a lot of attraction from the community. So I think we can do a better job at our youth camp. But what we're really working hard on right now are the camps that are blowing up, which is our high school team camp, where teams come as whole team units with their full coaching staffs. They stay overnight and they scrimmage. So we've got 10 teams on campus right now. We've got two different sessions of that, mostly Colorado teams, but also some teams from Wyoming. And so you know, a nice opportunity for those high school kids to get a lot of good work in their team units, but a great opportunity for us to get kids, not just football recruits, but potential students to UNC to live in the dorms, eat in the dining halls, practice on our practice fields and see all of our facilities, which we think stack up really well. We're proud of, and great exposure for UNC.
Well, yeah, it's a great marketing tool, not just for the football team, but for the university, too. I mean, I remember going to camps, and it was obviously nerve-wracking. You know, you're going to a university, you're going to have camp there. It's just something very cool. But these students, they're seeing the campus. They're getting a chance to kind of walk around and live a little bit like a potential student. So it is a great marketing tool.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, great marketing tool. And we use it in recruiting. As you know, I can't really talk to you about it, but we make – typically through our camp season, we're going to make somewhere around a half dozen offers just from our camp. So it's perfect. All the fits that I've talked to you about in terms of we want, regional or local players to be the first guys we look at. And we want people who, kids who can really thrive in Greeley, whether that's because their parents are just a short drive away and they're here a lot, whether that's because they're used to living in this area, this type of community, which we'd include, a large part of Wyoming. Wyoming doesn't Sure. have an FCS school, so there's not a lot of other, competition for us. And that's really the strike zone for us in recruiting is, finding the kids that are overlooked.
How do you guys go about that? What does the process look like? I mean, when these team camps starts, are you kind of just walking around in circles, looking around at guys? I mean, you talk to me about that process too, because I'm always curious.
So we're old fashioned, and so I'm gonna take this answer maybe a little more detailed than you're asking.
Do it,
but we're old fashioned since the advent of the internet. Once the internet really started ramping up the recruiting sites, you got the 247 is kind of the one that I think most college coaches are using right now, and college fans are, they're judging a lot, especially the position coaches. The fans of these schools are judging the position coaches by the stars that the position coaches are signing, right? And so now you have these awards, and like 247's brilliant, right? Because they're awarding, conference recruiters of the year and things like that. Well, the award has nothing to do with whether the player is making an impact on the field. Mm-hmm. It's all about the recruiting stars that 247 themselves are the ones issuing, right? So, and they have camps that are that you earn these stars at. So it's a brilliant marketing tool, and there's certainly correlation between a lot of these players, the stars that they get or earn or achieve, and then their potential to achieve in college. But it's not the game we're playing. We're completely out of that. We're not on those sites. We're not using those. We know that that's utilized heavily by other staffs, and we specifically at UNC have to find the uncovered player. And so we go the old-fashioned way. We are physically in the schools. So all these schools that are coming to our camps, we've been there in person, shaking hands with the coach, writing an old-fashioned list on paper of the guys we should be looking at, and then inviting these kids to camp, and then making offers based on what we're seeing, and we have no idea whether they have one star or three stars or or aren't even listed on the sites.
How do you begin that list when you start building that list up?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's so many, the vast majority of FBS and FCS schools, their list comes from they're ordering it from services, and they're just pulling up 247. That's one of the things one of the really strange dynamics that I saw is when recruiting kind of blew up and the fans and the internet and started to become more aware at the major college level. Okay, then we added these whole recruiting staffs. It used to be that your recruiting coordinator was also a coach. You'd be the special teams coordinator and the recruiting coordinator, or the running back coach and the recruiting coordinator. Now you have these guys that aren't. They don't have anything to do with the on-field coaching. They're not coaches per se, but they are the recruiting coordinator. And then they have the whole staffs. Well, they're only being judged by the number of stars that they achieve. And so as a position coach, you can really kind of irritate these recruiting guys based on how much authority they have. If you're trying to recruit guys that are under the radar, or they're diamonds in the rough, because these recruiting coordinators are going, wait, my career is based on how many stars we're signing, and you're over here taking this no-star kid. I'm mad at you. So we don't have that pressure at UNC, and it's really liberating because we can go look at a kid and say, okay, he has zero stars. He's not on 247. He's not on any of the lists that these other schools are, purchasing.
Sure.
From these companies that generate these recruiting lists. You know what? For us, that's perfect because he has one offer from us. Hmm. If we like what we see, what do we care whether 247 has found and evaluated this kid? We found him the old-fashioned way. We walked in the high school, shook hands with the coach, and said, "Coach, who do you got?"
Well, and tell me about the 247 too. I mean, are these just a lot of are there local people in the area that are following this, or are these guys that kind of swoop in and they just kind of grab the lowest hanging fruit? I mean, that to me is got to be a difficult task on both sides.
So it runs, the 247 is a big operation with a lot of names, and there are a lot of evaluators out there, and they go to camps. I think there are guys that do it really well. In the experiences that I've had, I think there are guys that do it really well, and I think that there are guys that are just scammers. I've actually had some of these evaluators insinuate that they want certain things from me in order to make my recruits look better.
It's funny you talk about the scammers. I have an account that has over 100,000 followers. It's called I'm going to call it out. It's called PrepStar. I don't know if have you ever heard of this? I'd never heard of this.
I have. Yeah.
I got a message from them. I got a message from them, and I'm going to read it. Brady, PrepStar has identified you, me, as a college prospect. We'll connect you with thousands of coaches.
Yeah.
Complete our recruiting questionnaire.
Yeah.
I'm 37, coach.
Right.
What is this? I mean, talk about scammers. Are they just sending out millions of messages and then hoping something sticks?
Yeah, I think that's more phishing.
Okay.
That's kind of an AI. You're showing up as football interested maybe with your social media profile.
Sure.
And so there's some type of algorithm that's saying, hey, maybe this kid's a high school high school prospect out there, and they're just fishing to see if they can provide you a service. This 247 thing is a little different.
It's
tilted toward really – they're I think a lot of them that are kind of maybe doing it in a way that I think is harmful to the game.
Mm-hmm.
They're on the fan sites. They're either pumping up coaches for recruiting their guys, or they're talking bad about coaches for not recruiting their guys, being bad evaluators. And then, you know, like some of these fan sites, they're driving some of these programs. It's a really interesting dynamic that most of my career I haven't had to be a part of. At BYU, which is the, you know, kind of the highest level that I coached at, in terms of, you know, I mean, we were independent but recognized really as P5 in a lot of the you know, the bowl games and scheduling, some of the conference scheduling agreements where they wanted you to have P5. And then, of course, now we moved to the Big 12 right at the end of my time there. And so I experienced that at that level, most schools, they're being judged almost primarily of their recruiting class based on the stars, and it's based on the 247. But at BYU, there's just some more leeway for the coaches because there's an expectation that you'll recruit Mormon kids, and mm-hmm. whether or not they're part of that, you know, that 247. And then there's also, I think, an understanding amongst the fans and administration, et cetera, that, you know, your place in the recruiting food chain for non-Mormon kids is going to be maybe not quite at the level of your conference mates. And so you have to find a way to get a creatively good team there. But here at UNC, nobody's really paying attention to how many recruiting stars that we get. If an FCS school is getting a four-star player, there's probably something missing in that puzzle. There's a piece of the puzzle missing. Man. There's some information that somebody doesn't have because, you know, a four-star kid should have opportunities that pale, that would make the FCS opportunity pale by comparison.
You got to filter through a lot of stuff. Yeah. I mean, especially nowadays. I mean, here we are in 2024. You're getting big-time accounts. This one here has 100,000 followers, yeah. And it's clearly like you said, fishing, which crushed my dreams, by the way. I thought for a moment, all right, here we go. We got a chance here. But you guys have to filter through a lot of junk, too, as far as finding who's going to be potentially on your football team.
We do. Yeah. And you know, just as I'm sitting here, I'm wondering, am I making this sound, you know, negative in terms of, you know, my thoughts, my evaluations of 247 or these other organizations that are out there. And I think overall, it's all promoting college football. And when you talk about NIL and when you talk about, you know, what these players now are able to gain just from their college experience, financially, professionally, in a lot of cases, I think it's fantastic. It's just, I don't have to say that it's accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to continue to see at the NFL level where these guys, their very careers and livelihoods are based on drafting the very best players that they can get. We're going to continue to see guys drafted that weren't, you know, highly rated high school prospects. It's a developmental game, and that's our strike zone at UNC.
So with these camps, talk to us about what these guys are going through. Like, what are the drills that they're running, the things that you're looking at once they actually get on campus?
We're really facilitators. We do have a one-day mega camp that's for individuals. And a lot of these guys that are here with their teams this week, they'll come back to our mega camp. And we have over 25 different schools represented, coaches from all over the country come in and evaluate. And we do the same. We go to their mega camps or elite camps or whatever you call it. And those are one-day camps where our coaching staff and the guest coaches are coaching the players by position with kind of, I would call them general fundamental skill drills. And that don't really pertain to what the high schools are doing. But when these high schools and their staff bring these teams to our camp, they're strictly looking for competition. And they don't really care, you know, what UNC coaches are coaching. And it's the same when, you know, when we had team camps at you know, major colleges. You could have Nick Saban or Bill Belichick here as a guest coach. And a lot of these high school coaches, they understand that yeah, those are great coaches, but that doesn't, what they teach doesn't necessarily pertain to what I'm trying to accomplish with my high school kids. And so they're not really interested in us as UNC coaches doing anything other than evaluating their players, creating a great camp environment. And so we bring the juice, we bring the energy, we structure it, we set up the schedule for field for the fields and for the meetings and video opportunities and the competitive schedule. And that's really our job at these team camps.
I think that that part is really interesting too, because yeah, the coaches of these high school teams, they're wanting to make sure they're getting the best out of this too. This is a unique opportunity. It gets these kids a little bit out of their comfort zone, so they're trying to evaluate their talent. And in that process too, these kids have something, they have something to shoot for. I mean, they have reasons to really push several months before the season even hits.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, they're fighting for their team at these camps. It is a great environment. If anyone out there, well, I guess this is not really a live show, right? But we have some more camps coming up. You can find information. If you're a football junkie and you just enjoy watching kids compete, you enjoy watching football players compete, just come out to any of the camp sessions. This is all straight scrimmage. It's just like watching games, and there's a lot of juice, a lot of energy. Several of our players finished their workouts yesterday and then stuck around all night. I mean, the last scrimmage ended at 9:30 p.m., and so we had Cash Cheeks and Ezra Kuban. These guys were just they're watching, like, hey, coach, what else am I going to do? Go home and play video games? You know, like,
take in more football.
I train, and then I love football. And so, interesting story. I was talking to both of them yesterday. I think a lot of people will appreciate this story. I'm gonna go way back here. So the year would have been somewhere around 2005 or six, and Marshawn Lynch had come out of Oakland Tech. His cousin Josh Johnson also came out of Oakland Tech. I think Josh is the longest tenured NFL quarterback in history, played for almost every team.
Almost every team, yeah.
He was our quarterback at San Diego, and I was the Oakland Tech recruiter. And so I knew Josh, and we had several other Oakland Tech guys come out of there. And that's where I grew up in the Oakland area. And so for a long time, that was really the sweet spot for me for recruiting. So, okay, here's the story. And here's how it pertains to what I was telling you about our camp yesterday. Josh was in his second or third year at USD at San Diego, where I was working for Jim Harbaugh, and Marshawn was at Cal at that time, and their cousins and close family members still are. So I was at a Stanford camp doing this thing I was telling you about, where college coaches, you know, they go to these camps and we're trying to evaluate and work the camps and network and all that stuff. So I was over at Stanford, which takes an hour to get to from Berkeley, right? But I'm at Stanford and I'm just watching a drill. And this, you know, kid, I'll call him by age, but I mean, Marshawn Lynch is a big dude, comes up next to me. I didn't see him coming. Hey, coach, what's going on? And I looked, and his face looked familiar, right, because of the recruiting process. I knew who Marshawn Lynch was, and he was already a really good player at Cal, but it just didn't strike me right away. And he goes, I'm Marshawn, you know, Josh's cousin. And he said, good to see you. And I was like, thanks, man, what's going on? Like, hey, what are you doing here? So this is a college player that plays at Cal, that's an hour away at Stanford, and he said, I just wanted to see some football.
Wow.
And I told this to our players because it made such an impression on me. And obviously this was before Marshawn became beast mode and you know, maybe he's Hall of Fame guy. I don't know. I mean, he's incredible. And to me, I always loved watching him play because he runs so dang hard. But here's a guy that drove an hour to see some high school football in the summertime. And I think a lot of people have this impression of Marshawn and other guys in the NFL that they're just like, they're all talent. They show up and do their deal. There's these thuggy guys, you know, like, no, this is a football junkie. This guy went during his college career when you don't have any money, you don't have a lot of time. There's all kinds of pressing things. There's all kinds of tempting activities to be doing. And he drove or took BART and traveled for an hour to take himself to a high school camp at his rival – at the rival school across the bay just to watch football. And I was so proud of our players because – and when I told them that story, they were pretty geeked up. Like, yeah, okay, I'm like Marshawn.
Well, I mean, again, you know that to play at this level, at your level, coach, you have to be good, obviously. You have to have that talent. But the guys that typically take that next step, I mean, they just eat, breathe, and they sleep this stuff. And that's another great example. It's It is June 12th. It is hot out there. And you're seeing high school kids. Some of them could be good. Some of them might not be so good. But you just want to absorb more football. Those are the guys you want. Like you said, football junkies.
Yeah, absolutely. To run a whole team, you know, as the head coach, I'm not looking at six or eight guys in my position group. To get this whole team to a championship level, we're going to definitely need guys that are football junkies. They just love football of all types. You know, their video game choice is football every time. Their television choice is football every time. Their free time, if there's football anywhere around, they're going to be there. And we'll have a certain number of those. We also will have a certain number that are just maybe great athletes, that football is their opportunity, and we got to teach them and create this environment that they will love. And it's a struggle to get them there, because there's a lot of other things in life. There's a lot of other cool things in life. We happen to be football players because we're born in America and big or fast or something like that, or our dads or uncles played or something. So I think to really develop a whole team, you can't expect to have 100% of them be like that into football, but it sure is fun coaching those guys that are that into football.
Well, and that's got to be the interesting thing too, because you're going to just have those guys that are just purely talented, and they know, hey, I can play at this level. I'm going to just do it, say I did it. And then when it's over, you know, I move on with my life. And those guys, some of those guys might be great for you. They might end up having phenomenal seasons, but you kind of know that that's just kind of an interest for them. But then when you find a handful of those guys or whatever that are just so dedicated to this, and this is what they want to do nonstop. They want to talk football. They want to see football. And if they have the talent mixed in, those typically can be those guys that can really shoot up to that next level.
They can, and that's what happened at, you know, this is, I mentioned Southern Utah so much on this podcast, and it's a long time ago, so I'm trying to remind myself of, like, don't go there too often, but it is the blueprint, and we did achieve something special there, and so many of those so many of the guys that in that later run that we had, or, you know, where we made the playoffs two out of the 3 years, the first two times ever had made the playoffs in that school's history, won the Big Sky Championship outright. Those guys, so many of them harkened back to spring practice. I think it was in 2011, which was like 4 or 5 years before, where it was announced during the spring game that Brad Sorensen was drafted. Our quarterback was drafted. And so many of them in later years told me, Coach, I just didn't know it could happen from here. And then all of a sudden, okay, now guys are really working toward a different realization. And then we set the record for sending the most FCS kids to the NFL combine, right? And now we got guys, multiple guys getting drafted in 2015, and nine kids, can't remember, it was eight or nine kids went to an NFL camp that year off of an FCS team, which is an incredible number for a Southern Utah that never won a recruiting battle. We never even got in recruiting battles. We weren't interested in them. We always figured we were going to lose them. So if a kid had other offers that were legitimate, we moved on and tried to find. Our hard work was not in trying to woo kids. It was trying to find kids that nobody else knew about, and we were able to do it and set up the blueprint for success. And so much of it was because of the success that Brad Sorensen achieved when he got drafted.
It's amazing. Once these guys do pop, you know, whatever that is, maybe they, in this day and age, maybe they rock with you for a while, and we talked about the transfer portal and NIL and all that stuff. Once a couple of those guys pop, or maybe they go to the next level, then you start looking at UNC saying, man, why not? You know, there's opportunities there. If we go light it up, And then I start to shine, because you have a lot of those football players that I think are going to shine this upcoming season, that I think more and more, it's like a beacon. More and more of those guys look at it and say, there's an opportunity there where these guys are coaching us up the right way and can get us ready for the next level.
I agree. I've told the players that I've talked to you about it. I would love to see the transfer portal for us, if guys are going to leave, right? I don't want to try to convince guys to stay. That's a battle that's just going to keep recurring every day. I'm trying to convince them to stay through my daily actions, through the way that I treat them, the way that we coach them, the success that we're going to have. But once they get it in their mind that they should be somewhere else or they have great opportunities, what I'm hoping for is that they're choosy about those opportunities. And if we can inspire some of the young players, because one of these veteran players gets an amazing NIL opportunity, I'm not talking about $50,000. I'm not talking about even $100,000. I'm talking about these guys that are going straight from FCS to Power 5 programs, and they're projected starters. They're getting in the $300,000 range. And so long as this dynamic still exists, because the rules can change today, mm-hmm. all of a sudden, and yeah. now there's no more portal, there's no more NIL and all that stuff. But as long as it exists, I'm using it like the draft. I think we can inspire a whole team when a guy does this right, and we will have guys at that level at UNC. We're going to develop them to that level. My hope is that we just, you know, they're choosy and they pick the right opportunity to leave and don't leave too early and undercut themselves.
Coach, I want to talk about more of the incoming transfers. We spent some yeah. time on two guys last week too, but I wanted to pick your brain a little bit, and it was kind of a fun story. You helped me break some news, by the way, with the Van Cheele thing, which was fantastic.
Nice.
That
Good.
Was awesome,
yeah.
so I thank you for that. But can I tell you, let me pull back the curtain a little bit. Van reached out to me after I put that out on Twitter, and he said, man, I was going to announce that after week one. After week one, I was going to announce that because I wanted the Rams fans to be shocked that I was going to I'm with UNC. And I'm like, I said, bro, people are going to know yeah. when you're on that depth chart, right? The yeah. depth chart, we're going to talk about you week one. And he joked and said, never mind. Actually, I've had so many people reach out and so many compliments from folks. Van's dad reached out to me, which was awesome. And he's like, dude, this is great. You guys are talking us up. Fantastic. What was that process like? Because with Van Cheele, coach, I got to be honest, I was pretty, not crazy shocked in this day and age, but I thought he was part of the long-term plan at CSU. I really did. And I think that listeners need to know, I mean, he's going to be competing like you talked about last week. But what was it? Was it just, I mean, how much do you know about that situation? I just think, and maybe you can't talk about it that much, but this to me is a fantastic story. I mean, CSU Pueblo, CSU, now UNC, he's Colorado through and through. I love his story, but I really did think he was part of the long-term plan at CSU. So I'm really excited for you guys and this potential solid running back for your roster.
Well, I mentioned before, with a local kid like this, we don't really need to reach out to CSU. Normally, you would, just professionally. And them, you know, being on the schedule, that's, you know, I'm rooting for Coach Norvell and all those guys to have success. I'm rooting for CSU every day but one.
Sure.
You know, and that's the day we actually play them. And in terms of a professional dynamic where, you know, Jay would take my call and, hey, I want to talk to you about Van and make sure he's the right character and everything, that would be, you know, that would be completely separate from the competition that we have,
yeah,
the
absolutely.
Game day that we have coming. And that's I've never had a coach that got goofy about that type of deal. But in this case, there wasn't a need to because he's a local kid and we're right here locally. So we know his people. We know his high school coaches. We know we have teammates. You know, we know we have kids on our team that know this guy. So we knew the character issue. And as I mentioned to you last time we talked about Van a little bit, it wasn't I don't have the inside information, the inside dynamic, because I didn't reach out to Coach Norvell or anybody over there to figure that out. But I can tell you that there's a track record of success that Van has achieved there. There's no question in my mind that CSU would have had plans for him, would want him to stay, right? But as Van told us, and this is kind of all we have to go on, and all we need is there were some other guys that were more maybe more heavily recruited, or they have higher expectations for, is a fair way to say it. And you know, Van doesn't come in with a lot of fanfare, right? Like he was a Division II transfer from Pueblo. He was not a highly recruited guy. He's not, you know, as a position coach, like I said. Now I'm not pushing this narrative on CSU, but
sure.
What I'm telling you is at UNC, we're really looking for guys at the high school level who are flying under the radar and at the college level. And a lot of these, where it used to be, you could as a walk on join a big time program and work your way up. There's a lot of pressure on college coaches now to play the guys who came in highly rated, because that's what position coaches are getting paid for now. They're getting hired and paid based on their recruiting class rankings, and then, you know, are those guys playing and contributing? And so we do see an opportunity for guys like Van who are just there working their butts off trying to get an opportunity. And okay, he's on the depth chart. He's a solid guy. CSU would, I'm sure, confirm that. They did by just putting him in the game. He was the leading rusher in several games, and I believe for the season
sure,
in terms of the overall yardage.
Yep.
So, like, this is not a guy certainly that they're not trying to push him out or anything like that. Very solid student. Loves the weight room and a hardworking guy. That's just a great fit for us. And so that's the dynamic that we looked at from the beginning. We felt very comfortable with it. My interviews with him went exactly as I would hope. He says the right things, carries himself the right way, and he's just been a great addition here in the first 10 days or so of training.
Well, and I know he's excited. You know, we're planning to get him on. It's the 12th today. The Rockies are preempting me, but we were actually planning to get him on the show today. We were going to talk a little bit, but I think we're going to do that next week just to kind of get his thoughts through that process too. But I know he's pumped. He's excited. And this is what I love about covering the area, talking about all these different football teams. So many people from the CSU camp, as far as fans, whatever, were so excited about this move because they looked at this kid and said, we think he's got the right stuff. We think he could have been solid in the Mountain West too. But now we still get to enjoy watching him in the state of Colorado. So this was really exciting. And I know this is a crazy time when we're looking at the transfer portal and how you're completing your roster. But this was a big move. And I know you got several other guys too that you're pumped about as far as coming in and competing and getting ready for the upcoming season, Coach.
We do. And I'll start with kind of that same fit in terms of being local guys. We really do feel like that we're going to build a better team at UNC. I don't want it to be a comparison thing. I don't want this to come out like this is, you know, they're not doing this at CSU. They're not doing this at Boulder. Like, that's not what I'm saying here. What I'm saying is at UNC, our best opportunity here to build this program to a championship level is to mine the local talent. And so we found some guys. Let me start with we talked about Hudson Vogeser last week as well, and Van. And so those are two local kids, very local, that from the northern Colorado region, actually, of Colorado, that are transferring from New Mexico State and Colorado State, respectively. But also I've been really excited about Josh Harvey from Jesuit High School. He's coming from Emporia State. And, you know, we really – he drove a lot of the initial conversation, and he's just been a huge surprise as he's come in. I mean, his energy is like palpable, like in the weight room, on the practice field. Have really enjoyed what I've seen from him these first, like I say, a week and a half or so of training, and have some really high hopes for him. He's gonna play safety for us and really add something at that position, I think. We also have Jay Berry from Fairview High School, Jay Berry Jr. from Fairview High School. He was at Florida International. And, you know, just very honestly about Jay, I think he got into a situation where, you know, went across the country. Maybe, you know, in the recruiting dynamic, there's a lot of pressing going on nowadays. And I think he was kind of pressed into a situation across the country where there's connections and, you know, it's like, hey, let's get this guy an opportunity. That doesn't always work out, and I think that's what happened to Jay is when you finally get there, you realize, look, everybody has a story. There's a politic for every kid on the depth chart, and the politic of kind of just getting an opportunity at the highest level you can, well, maybe that works out. Maybe it doesn't, but that's the guy we have interest in. If you've got ability, if you've got talent, if you're a Colorado kid and you're out there someplace and not quite making it at the level you want on that depth chart, there may be an opportunity here at UNC if it's a good fit. So excited to have Jay and all these guys, you know, just because they've been at the FBS level, that doesn't mean that they're not still developmental players. I want to say, like, it's been pretty encouraging for our players to get Division I transfers in here, FBS transfers, and realize, okay, these guys are the same as us. So they got some catching up to do, right? Because we're a weight room program. Like, we're stronger than a lot of FBS programs, and I can't wait. That's not just a statement. It's not just me bragging. It's something that people know and see on the field, and it will happen. So Jay, I think has a lot of development potential. Really excited about him. Another guy, let's see. And then Jaden Thomas from Windsor High School. running
awesome.
Back. Yeah,
love
another
that.
Guy from New Mexico State.
We probably said his name millions of times on this station because of our broadcasting with the prep site.
And that's, you know, there's a guy, I think another guy that's going to come in and say, okay, wait, this is home for me. Can I be one of the catalysts to turn UNC around, to turn this program around? I want that dynamic. And the more local, I think the more likely that guys are going to have that motivation, have that dynamic. And we certainly think that Jaden can offer that. And then, you know, I've said this before, we're going to give Colorado kids the first look from high school. We're going to give the Colorado transfer portal kids the first, you know, the kids coming back to Colorado the first look. But it's not going to be 100% of our team. We've got a lot of good players that were recruited by previous staffs that are not from Colorado. We've got, and we're going to continue to have to supplement our recruiting class with other guys. But here are some other guys that we've added, transfer guys. So we needed some depth at the offensive line position. Jack Bacon. How about that name?
It's a perfect offensive lineman name,
offensive
right?
Great offensive lineman name. And he's a fit. This guy, so he was at Stephen F. Austin. And kind of the same thing, just, you know, he's a California kid, not happy with where he was at on the depth chart there, looking for another opportunity. Okay, so the film comes out, the name comes out on the portal. We're looking at him going, you know what, he fits what we do. He's a big guy, 6'5", 300 pounds, really strong. And so he's driving home to California, and he's going to take several days. And our offensive line coach, Nick Nissen, is like, okay, well, you know, it doesn't take that many days. He goes, yeah, I just camp out on the side of the road. This guy was camping.
Wow.
Yeah. And so when he got here, I heard it, but I didn't understand it. And so I was like, hey, do you need some recommendations on campgrounds or stuff like that? He's like, coach, I don't pay for campgrounds. Stay on the side of the road. So, yeah, this is
a little Matthew McConaughey right there.
Yeah. this guy, he's an outdoorsman in every way.
Wow.
So one of our 316s, we've talked about those Misogis. When he came on his visit, I told him about that and actually showed him some video of guys doing the 316. He videos us back 3 days later of him doing it in work boots and jeans.
No way.
Yeah. So this is like our kind of guy. This guy's going
to
fit in Greeley. He's a California kid. But he's used to rural. He really loves, obviously, Colorado has so much to offer for a kid that enjoys the outdoors, right? And so he's already been out with our guys. He's doing the fishing thing. I think he really has found a home quickly with that offensive line. So that's Jack Bacon.
That's awesome. What a great story. Sounds like we need to get him on here pretty soon.
I
would like to talk to him.
I think just the name, right? Like you say you're having Jack Bacon on your show. There's a couple of people that are just like, huh, I don't want to listen here. Let's see. Oh, Ryder McGilvray, wide receiver. He was at Utah State last year. He's originally from Provo High School, so a lot of connections with our staff, and heard that he was in the portal looking for another opportunity. He's been amazing. I'll give you the kind of one of the stories on him. I mentioned a few weeks ago that I had felt really badly about the day of our spring game. I really hammered in kind of the pre-game speech, if there's such a thing on a spring game, and I'm not really a pre-game speech guy, so take all that in context. But I had come down hard on our players for what I heard were these poker nights that were happening regularly and into the early hours of the morning. And I felt like that was not the type of behavior that we consistently wanted to be striving for as a poker night team. So and I probably cracked down a little too hard on that. Well, Ryder was on his visit, his official visit, and he heard that whole thing. And it was like 10, 15 minutes after that meeting broke, and I was just thinking to myself, okay, I came down too hard on poker night. Like, I don't want the guys doing poker night. But on the scale of danger to your football career, I was making it sound more dangerous than it was. So I need to preach this thing in the proper context. And I probably scared the heck out of Ryder. Like, what is wrong with this head coach? Guess what? He was inspired by it.
Wow.
He was inspired by it, and he called the next day and was like, "I'm in. If that's what you're representing, if you're representing pouring everything you can pour into football, that's what I'm here for. That's what I was looking for, and so I'm here." And so he's been awesome. And
that's such a cool
working
story.
Hard in the weight room. He's got some catching up to do in the weight room because Utah State is all about like speed and fitness. That's their offensive style, their defensive style. They're trying to just wear you out. And so they don't lift the way we lift. And so he's going through a transition on that right now, but he does not back down. Tremendously tough individual. Really excited about what he's going to add to us. And then another one, kind of the connections deal, but from University of Utah, Colby Howard, who's originally a California kid as well, but tight end, transferring to us from University of Utah. And I feel like we have three really, really good tight ends, but they're all getting into their veteran years. Colby actually has 4 years left. He's a return missionary kid, so a lot of our staff is LDS, and I'm not, but I have the BYU ties and know what the LDS kids are going through and know how to make sure that they, you know, have their opportunities and their opportunities are supported to be, you know, strong in their faith. So I think that's another good fit for us. They're not all Colorado kids, but I think that's a pretty good sample of what we're trying to accomplish. And we're not really looking for transfers. And we want to build this with high school kids. But when a veteran leaves after the signing date, well, we have to get our roster back to that maximum number allowable. And so we have to go with transfer kids. There's not high school kids generally available that are worthy of coming in and helping us if they're not signed on the signing day.
Man, I love these stories, though. I mean, how cool is it? Like, you could write a book. No wonder you kind of like doing this podcast, too, because you're telling me just a couple of small stories there. You got guys working out in boots and jeans, just videoing, showing you what they're about. You got other guys that are inspired by kind of a conversation that you said, you stepped back and said, was I too hard on everybody? Lo and behold, it actually inspires a Utah State receiver to want to transfer to your program. There's so many stories that goes into building up a football team well beyond the physical side of things. So this is one of the things that I absolutely love about this, is just getting a small sample size and learning a little bit about these dudes.
It's one of the things that I absolutely love about coaching is the way that it just changes week after week after week throughout the year, and the different dynamics, the different stories, the different things we're working on. And that was kind of the idea. When you and I talked about a podcast, we didn't say, let's do it once a week or whatever. But in my mind, I was thinking, I think the questions that you were asking me just in our initial conversation, I'm like, okay, here's a guy that understands football. He talks to coaches all the time, but he maybe doesn't have a great idea, an accurate idea of what I'm doing in January versus February versus March, April. And now here we are into June talking about a little different things. And it's going to change dramatically as we get into August and September, right? Again, it'll change. So I love that part about it. And then the stories that happen, and that's why I love having guys that I have a history with around me. And that's why so many of our staff are guys that I have a history with, is there's just times unscripted where I'm sitting in the coach's locker room, it's after practice, or I'm walking down the hallway, and one of my coaches or guys that played for me before or coached with me before, they say, hey, you remember this? Or, hey, what happened today reminds me of this thing that happened back then. And there are so many great stories. You're right. The book would just be ongoing.
Yeah. Oh well, we've had a couple of listeners that have said, "Man, you guys need to take this is like Hard Knocks, but it's in a very positive light." I mean, all these conversations. Not to say we're not getting deep into dramatic type topics once in a while, but these are all positive stories. But they're also outlining the struggles, the journey, the things that are going through your head, learning more and more about you. This is what it's all about. And then when you start telling me stories about guys that are camping out on the side of the road. I mean, I'm just picturing, you know, a movie or something of all these guys coming together. The movie The Replacements, where you just get guys from completely different walks of life joining together for one common goal. And that, to me, is the most beautiful thing. It's why football is the best, because you have so many different personalities joining a team.
It's of all the sports I've played, and people say this, and I agree, it is the ultimate team sport. There's just so many thankless jobs on a football field. Guys completely under the radar. Yeah, the running back or the quarterback or the wide receiver are getting all the credit. And the offense in general is getting all the credit. Or the guy that gets the sack. But, you know, as a coach, we see it. The guy that gets the sack, even if he is appreciated, and sacks are highly appreciated, I should recognize that. But how often that sack comes because the defensive back was covering the receiver, the intended receiver, right? And the quarterback couldn't get through to his second, third, fourth read, whatever. And any offensive coach will tell you, a quarterback coach will tell you, sacks are it's on the offense. You know, it's not necessarily on the offensive line getting beat. It's the quarterback holding the ball too long. Now, why that happened? That could have been somebody else on the field, and that's why it's the ultimate team sport. Is there's just, you know, the fan perspective or the announcer perspective or even the coach with the naked eye without the aid of being able to rewind the video. It's really hard to tell who's making plays and who's getting beat, who's winning and who's losing battles until you can just sit there and rewind and watch over and over and over. That's why it's such a great team sport, is because you're out there doing a thankless job just for the success of the team.
Well, and even those key positions too. You talk about quarterback, running back, wide receiver, those guys that get, you know, they get the talk, but a lot of what they're doing in between those big plays are what can stick out too. Is a wide receiver willing to dig in and start blocking like crazy, make the plays, be a decoy, really sell it? Running back, the same story. So even those guys that get in the spotlight, throughout the game, they have to be producing in different ways. This is one of the reasons, I was talking about this yesterday on my show, Coach. This is one of the reasons that I actually favor sitting at home and getting older, sitting at home and watching games rather than going to games, is because of what you just said. You can rewind the play and go back because, yeah, we saw the end result, but I want to see what happened before, what the camera angles will give me, of course, but I want to see what happened before. How did this play break down, you know, what was the starting point here? And you don't necessarily get that all the time live. So this is one of the beautiful parts of this, is you get to break into the beginning, not just the end result.
It'll be really interesting when we get to the season and can talk about some of the key plays that maybe were breakthroughs or setbacks during the game and contributed to the final outcome of the game. And if we continue to do this on Wednesdays like we do now, I will have some time to digest the previous game. It's so frustrating as a coach when you get questions by the media right after a game, and we don't want to say we got to look at the film.
Yeah,
because you're straight into coach speak, right? Mm-hmm. You become a meme where we got to watch the film. We got a good ball club, but they got a good ball club. Give them credit. You know, you're just going through all the stuff that everybody says, but it's so true. I haven't been around any the best football coach that I was ever around was Dave Adolph. He could see it live. I mean, when you're a defensive coordinator in the NFL for 30 years or whatever he was, like, that's so much amazing experience. He doesn't have the burden of recruiting in the offseason. He's in a film room for 30 years perfecting his craft. And even he, like on game day, he could see it better than anybody live that I had ever been around. But even he couldn't see it accurately. And, you know, the old, I got to watch the film, it was true in his case as well.
Well, and that one's one of those coaching cliches that I've always been 100% good with. Because I get it. When you guys are watching, you know your game plan, you know what's happening, but it is physically impossible. It's impossible for you to watch everything, to see every person on that field, to know, okay, I know 1 through 11's job. I know what they're supposed to do here. But it's impossible for you to see. Maybe it was a left guard didn't perform the right way. Maybe the quarterback didn't do it the right way. A running back took off too soon or something. So you do have to go back on the film. And what went down on that key play when we had some broken coverage? Well, maybe it was a linebacker that was supposed to do something too. So I've always actually given you guys sympathy when you say, hey, I got to go back and look at the film, because it's impossible to see it all break down in real time.
Yeah, impossible. Even like what you're describing, you can see, you can actually be focused in for whatever reason on let's say a guard, and that guard gets beat and there's a tackle for loss. And so immediately you're, okay, I got to coach this guy, figure out what happened, or I saw what happened. I want to, you know, get after him and motivate him. But sometimes you find out later the center made the wrong call. Mm-hmm. You know, the center called a deuce call and it should have been an ace, and that's what got the guard beat, because it was the wrong front for that blocking scheme. Or you see a corner get beat and he's out there on an island, and you don't realize the call that the safety made, because even within coverages, we have slightly different techniques and responsibilities that the safety can change or tweak. And that's not like we're not reinventing the wheel here. Every program has that. And so to the naked eye, it might look like the corner is getting beat, But it's really the safety didn't give the help that he said he was going to give on that play.
That's why I'm always careful on my show. And I think I've been okay at this over the years, is I'm never quick to go after a cornerback for blown coverage. Yeah. Because I don't know if he was only in a zone of some sort, and he can't go too deep. So I'm always careful on that side. I remember going to football games all the time, and guys would just roast a cornerback. You know, oh, you're wearing a Dre Bly jersey. He coughed up the game. It's like, you don't know if really the safety was the one who's actually supposed to be deep down the field, and this guy just thought he was going to pick him up. So I'm always very careful about that. Last question for you, Coach. On this note, when you are coaching a game, when you're watching the game, you're viewing this game, where are your eyes? What are you focusing on the offensive side of the ball? Where are your eyes first?
So I want to maintain as much as possible a broad focus. And so I think I would need to pull up video and actually talk you through second by second, frame by frame.
That would be cool.
What I'm looking at. Yeah, I mean, I want to see, like, just for example, since you said offense, I want to see, you know, like at the beginning of a series, I want to see how we take the field. I want to see the energy, the posture coming off of a sideline. I want to see the commitment to communication that's happening pre-snap. As the formation starts to get formatted on the field, as the guys start to line up, I want to see continued communication, but prompt by our offensive line. I want to see receivers communicating with the sideline officials to make sure that our alignments are set correctly. And then I want to see a quarterback who's eyes up, correct posture, showing confidence in the play call, in his in the moment, right, and looks like he's about to win a play. And then as the ball is snapped, right, I'm typically looking at the point of attack. I want to see the point of attack, but I don't want to see it so narrowly that I'm missing other things going on the field. Because as the head coach, I've got a guy who's watching the point of attack as the position coach and the coordinator. And so I don't want to duplicate that too much. I want to see the game and see the results of the game, but I also want to see if we've got a player with a bad attitude, if we got a player that's doing some extra jawing, some extracurricular stuff. I want to see the overall shape of the offense or defense for that matter, that's formulating on the field. I want to see if somebody away from the ball is hustling the way that they should be hustling to try to get somehow play side and spring the block that may make a 25-yard gain into a 45-yard gain or a touchdown, right? And so it just changes frame by frame from the video. But if I needed to say it in kind of a quick answer, I would say as the head coach, I want to have a very broad focus so I'm not duplicating any of our position coaches throughout the whole play.
Okay, I take it back. It is possible to watch every single position from you. Just hearing you say it, I'm like, oh my gosh, there's a lot that goes into, what, 20, 30 seconds. And this is why head coaches are probably stressed out sometimes, because there's so many things that you have to pay attention to leading up to the week. But then when we're coming to game time, every detail matters. It's a game of inches. And you are describing that in such a way where we can really, you know, we really lean in on that way of thinking when it comes to football. I love it.
Dave Adolph used to use the phrase shape of the defense. Mm. As the defensive coordinator, he wanted to see the shape of the defense, the way it should, you know, the shape of the defense should change as the play goes along. So there's a starting shape, and then there's a shape based on how the offense is moving the ball or blocking or dropping into a passing game. And then that shape should change based on pursuing to the football. And the offense is the same. And so I use that phrase a lot. I'm looking at the shape of the offense, the shape of the defense.
Coach, before we let you go, what's going on, you know, and just kind of housekeeping items here as far as camps, everything coming up for UNC football, anything we need to let our listeners know about coming up where they can check out and learn more?
It's we've got the No Limits Camp coming up. We're really excited about that. All of our players, or at least the vast, we don't make it mandatory because I think you lose something when you make stuff like that mandatory. But I think last year we had dang near 100% of guys, maybe that a work conflict or something, that came out and spent several hours with these we'll call them all abilities or special abilities.
Yeah, I like that.
Young players, and try to give them as much of a football experience as makes sense for each one of them individually. So we have to make sure. I think we've got 110 right now signed up for the No Limits Camp. We got to make sure that we at least have a one-on-one student to teacher ratio for every one of these kids, because we've got to find out what is that football experience for them. How do we maximize that football experience for them today? My part of running a whole team on a daily basis is fairly easy compared to that, right? Because here's what I say, look, hey, today, here's our practice plan. Everybody follow it. Everybody do this workout. Everybody do this warm-up. Everybody do this practice. And the whole team complies and we roll. But this No Limits Camp, we've got to figure out for each one of these kids what's their maximum potential today and then create an environment just for them. And it's really cool.
I love it. I absolutely love
adaptive.
That.
Adaptive. You hear the phrase, if you're in that world, I know you are, you hear adaptive physical education or adaptive sports, and that's what we're doing that day.
Where can folks go again? If they go to your website, they can get information on this too, on the UNC Bears website?
Yes, and I've mentioned her before, but Lori Couch with the Arc of Weld County. So that's another place that does a really good job of promoting it. So you can go to their website as well and the No Limits Camp. And I think just a Google search, you know, Northern Colorado No Limits Camp brings up plenty of information. And we'll do everything we can for any walk-ups that show up. I mean, we're just excited to make it as good as it could be for as many people as we can make it good.
I think it's an amazing thing for this community, Coach. Always appreciate it. All right, 19 down. We're going to be moving up to episode 20 next week. So
I will
it's a big one.
Do everything I can to remember to speak into the mic. For episode 20.
Well, and maybe this is pulling back the curtain a little bit, but we're sitting here talking, and this has never happened. Even our producer said it. The recording just stopped. It just stopped in the middle of it, and nobody touched anything. Coach is actually waving at me like, hey, we're not going anymore. Yeah. So maybe we won't have any snags like that next week. Let's just keep our fingers crossed.
I'm glad you brought that up. I kind of wanted to bring it up because it stopped in the middle of something I was saying.
You were talking about Van Shield,
and
yeah.
Then we tried to listen back, and I recreated what I was saying. And so now you guys are like, yeah, we'll just edit it. We'll just edit it. But I'm wondering, okay, I already misspeak or stutter enough.
Yeah.
Is this going to sound awful? Is this just another example of me sounding awful? So please edit that correctly. But I'm glad we kind of put a disclaimer in there. If I sound goofy, it's because we had some technical difficulties.
Well, and I got to say, you are a pro, because what you did there, that I was actually thinking that. I'm like, look at Coach here. I mean, you're ready to take over, Coach. When all is said and done and several championships later and you decide to retire and call it quits on the coaching side, I think that seat and that microphone looks pretty good on you over there. Yep. You handled it well.
A permanent podcast guest. Is anybody doing a career like that?
you never – hey, there's always new things sprouting up, man. We can make it happen.
True.
Episode 20 coming up next week. Coach, always appreciate your time. We'll talk to you then.
Likewise. Thank you, Brady.